Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to American Statesman Blog Talk Radio, the place where it's all about duty, honor, country, and one nation under God. Today is Wednesday, August 7th, 2024. And yes, I said Wednesday. This is we're having a special show tonight to help vet the candidates. In this particular case, it's for the Jackson County School Board Superintendent. So, excuse me. So hopefully we're going to have an interesting discussion here and learn more about the candidates. Two candidates are scheduled. Well, I should say one candidate, Lawrence Pender, he's going to be joining us here in just a minute. We had invited Hunter Nolan to join for the second half, but it looks like he was not going to be able to make it. So we might try to get him on at a different time. But the whole point of tonight's show is to have an open discussion, discuss what a school superintendent is, why we need a change in Jackson County, and the candidates, they can tell us why they're the best for the job and what it really means. So that's really the point. We feel like I go to candidate forums all the time, and it just seems like you don't always get to ask or the tougher questions. I'm not trying to be tough. I just want to be open, honest questions of what's going on with public education and why we need to take care of it, and what the failure of public education has been in the last few years and how it's impacting our children and our country. Because I think we have some serious problems, and I think several people will agree with that. So, we've got the candidate Lawrence Pender. We're going to talk to him about why he's running, what he thinks he can do to help Jackson County. It's not an attempt to go out there and bash other people. However, we've had some problems. We need to talk about what the problems have been and why we need to change and what we need to do. And before we get going, that I'm going to do, as I always do, start with either the pledge or the American Creed. Tonight we're going to go with the American Creed. I believe in the United States of America as a government of the people, by the people, for the people, whose just powers are derived from the consent of the governed. A democracy in a republic, a sovereign nation of many sovereign states, a perfect union, one and inseparable, established upon the principles of freedom, equality, justice, and humanity for which American patriots sacrificed their lives and fortunes. I therefore believe it is my duty to my country to love it, to support its constitution, to obey its laws, to respect its flag, and to defend it against all enemies. And this would be a very good history lesson for children. William Tyler Page wrote this, and this was actually accepted by the U.S. House of Representatives back in, I think it was 1917, 1918, back in then. But most people would not know that, and they wouldn't understand, a nation of many sovereign states, a sovereign nation of many sovereign states. Most would not understand that. And that's where we got to get back to education and covering a lot of issues. So I'm not going to do a lot of talking here up front because I want us to dive into this discussion with the candidate. The only thing is I will mention, because I have to say this anything to do with education, my friend Thomas Jefferson, if you expect a nation to be ignorant and free, you expect what never was and will never be. And so that is where I think we need to realize how our country has been impacted by the deterioration of public education. Public education is supposed to empower people, give you options, and improve everybody's life, but that isn't what's happened because of a variety of things, which we're going to talk about tonight. So with that being said, I'm going to open the line here for Lawrence Pender.
And can you hear me?
Lawrence, how are you doing this evening?
I'm tired. I just got off the side of the road with my son.
Running for office is fun, isn't it? A lot of work.
Well, it's 24/7, and I work 40 miles away and at another school in another district. And, I mean, I'm out working as hard as I can to get votes in Jackson County, but I've got a responsibility to my children and my teachers in Holmes County.
Yeah. Well, and we understand that. I myself and Karen have both run for public office, so we understand that. And we're going to, as much time as you can give us or whatever, you let us know when you need to move on. Because there's so many events going on, and there's just so much going on right now. So we totally understand the crazy schedule, but definitely appreciate you coming on to tell us a little bit more about yourself and why you, what you think we need to do with Jackson County, why you're running, and those types of things. And so I'll start off by just going ahead and saying, you know, who is Lawrence Pender? Just to tell us a little bit. Of course, I've met you at several of the events, so I know a little bit about you, but to share with others, and then why it's important for you to run for Jackson County School Superintendent.
Well, I just to start out, people can't see me. I appreciate this opportunity. I have listened to talk radio as long as I can remember. Before that, when I was a little boy, my father used to order cassette tapes of radio shows, and we'd sit around and listen to them on Saturday nights. And when I used to farm, I would listen to pre-recorded shows just to learn things, and so I knew more. And I love to read. And what I'm saying, I'm not saying from a script. My name's Lawrence Pender. I'm from Greenwood, Florida. I was born here. I was raised here in Jackson County. I'm a product of this school system. I have worked in 12 schools. I've been a principal in 9 of those schools in almost every community in Jackson County. I was recruited down to Franklin County to come down and turn around their school system, and now I'm over at Holmes County. I've been in some sort of education for over 30 years. I'm coming on 24 years in administration, and I love what I do. Now, just a little background. I hated school. I was bored in school. I wanted to run my father's store and farm and raise horses, and I didn't see the importance of school. And I got out of school. I did a lot of things. I've been a truck driver, a forklift driver. I've picked more cotton and peanuts than anybody I know with my education. I've been a cowboy. I've done all sorts of things. I loaded trucks. I put myself through college selling firewood and driving a parasail boat. And I was raised by my father. My brother and both my sisters were raised by our father to be able to make a living with our hands, but more importantly, to make a living with our brains. And he raised us to be able to think. And I started subbing as a favor to my sister. I liked it. I was in elementary school. I started subbing in high school. They would always call me for the roughest classes. And I figured out I did really well with those kids, and I did well with them because I understood them. They hated school as much as I did. And my thing about teaching, I didn't want those children to have to go through everything that I went through to get to be successful. I had to take a lot of remedial courses. Now, I wasn't dumb. I could take a placement test and be put in an honors class 4 weeks of not doing the work. They'd move me out. And I struggled so that my senior year, my guidance counselor, Belva Free, pulled me out of all my elective courses and put me in core courses and sent me to adult ed 4 nights a week to get a half a math credit to graduate. And I graduated. And when I went to college, I didn't have all the fundamentals that I needed to be successful. And when I went into teaching, my goal was to not make it so that the children that I taught didn't have to go through the things that I went through. And that's why I'm here today. I've worked in 3 different school districts. I've worked for 10 different superintendents. I had a little girl pull over today on the side of the road, and she said, "Mr. Pender, you're the best teacher I ever had." Now, every principal I've ever talked to thinks they were the best teacher they ever existed, but I don't. I'm very critical of myself, and I'm not the best principal in the world. I just work hard, and I do the best that I can for my children. But I want my children to be able to think, and I want them to know how to work, and I want them to be able to be successful.
Yep, and that is exactly what it's about. And then the other question, understanding what you believe in when it comes to the school system, why you thought it was time for you to run for the Jackson County School Superintendent. You must have seen something there that was concerning you, that you could, you know, there was a reason why you decided now is the time to run.
No, ma'am. I knew 28 years ago I wanted to be superintendent, and I've spent the last 28 years training myself for this position. I've been asked the last 3 times to run, but I've always told people I'm not ready yet. I'm not ready yet. I've not learned enough about my craft, what I do. And 4 years ago, I decided this next time I'm going to run. At that time, I was offered a job down in Franklin County to come turn their school around. And what caught me, what lured me down there, the lady, Karen Pettit, that interviewed me said, Lawrence, our children need you. And I knew in 4 years I was going to be running. I was always taught you don't run against your boss. And I thought, this is my opportunity to keep a job. Now, I had two small children at the time, and I told them they were worried about losing me. I said, you won't lose me. You'll see me as much as you ever have. I just got to spend the night someplace else 3 nights a week. And so every Monday morning, I'd leave my home in Greenwood at 3:30. I'd drive down to Franklin County. I'd go to my camper, change clothes, eat breakfast, and go to work. I'd stay down there Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesdays when school got over. I drove home, had supper with my boys, saw my father, checked on my animals. Thursday morning at 3:30, I drove back down, and then Friday afternoon, I'd be back home again. And I'd spend the weekends home, grass and taking care of everything that I needed to take care of. And I was okay with that. But after 2 years, they wanted me to sign another 2-year contract. And my wife told me that my boys needed me at home. And so I sucked it up and I said, I won't run this time. I'll wait another time. But there were no positions in Jackson County. So to get closer to home, I had to take a position in Holmes County. So I couldn't get a job here. I wasn't going to have to run against my boss. So I announced that I would run. Now, there's nothing in particular that made me want to run other than I feel like after all my years of service, I'm finally ready to help the children and the teachers and the citizens of Jackson County.
And with that being said, for people who don't fully understand what the county school superintendent does, kind of just let people understand a little bit more about this role is, because I truly believe a lot of people don't understand what the county school superintendent is.
Well, I've got a packet. It's 8 pages long of all the duties of the school superintendent. You're in charge of everything. I mean, you're in charge. And here's the deal. As a high school principal, I don't get to hire who I want to hire. I don't get to fire who I want to fire. And if anything happens, anything, they call me. If a teacher's upset with the child, they're going to send them to me. If a parent's up with the teacher, they're coming to see me. I can just sit here and name you dozens of things that happen in the day of a principal that some people wouldn't believe. The sewage drains back up. Some child finds a little mold on their hamburger patty, or the lights don't work at the football stadium, or somebody stole the sound system at the football stadium. They all call the principal. Even if the blinking light out front doesn't work, they call the principal and you've got to fix it. As superintendent, not only are you responsible for a school, you're responsible for multiple schools. You've got multiple educational leaders working under you, and then you're responsible for all those teachers beneath them. You've got to handle finance. You've got to be able to talk about, you've got to be able to make contracts. You've got to go to Tallahassee and be able to navigate your way through the politics there. You've got to be able to communicate with people from the Department of Education. You've got other superintendents you've got to deal with. You've got the Sheriff's Department, individual municipalities. You've got to manage a budget. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And I feel after all these years, I'm prepared for that. I know lots of superintendents. I've been to lots of things. I go to every training that I can, and I've worked in almost every community of this district. And each of those communities is unique. Each of the schools in those communities are unique. I was at a school one time that was failing. I was sent there, and some people came in, and they were going to redesign that school after another school across the district. And I told them, it won't work. We don't have the same people. They're not the same clientele. We've got to do things differently. And it was like beating against a wall to try to convince them of that. But finally, I did what I needed to do, and we were a D school, and we moved up to a B in a year.
Well, that's excellent. And, you know, the thing is, too, and I mean, I know this is true from various jobs, but especially when it comes to teaching, you can't really – there's a gift to it. Some people are natural with it, and some people just aren't. It's not a matter of being dumb or stupid or extremely genius, whatever, but there is an art to it. And, excuse me, they think you can – just simply train a teacher in a college. And, well, they need a certain education and that type of thing. they need to know how to read and write and arithmetic kind of thing. There's something that is internal to the individual. There's some people who will be masters at it because that's just a gift they were given, and others who just, even though they might be, again, equally smart, it's just a difference. You're dealing with the children. You're dealing with a different environment that way. You're dealing with parents. Then, of course, in today's world, you're dealing with a lot of other cultural issues that are just disgusting when we talk about what's happened to education. But I really do think there's a certain type of person. It's a special gift to be able to reach the children, to motivate them, to get them excited about learning. And that's what we really need. And I think that's something that gets lost way too many times. And also because, unfortunately, through some of the things that have happened with our culture, teachers have been somewhat misled into what they're supposed to teach. It's, you know, we won't get into too much of that, but unless others ask the questions. But, I mean, it's just a sad situation. But it truly is an art and a gift to be able to reach children and teach them. It's just a completely different thing. And I admire those who can really do that. I'm not sure that I could. I've nieces and nephews and things, you know, when I help with them, but I don't know that I could be in that classroom and teach those children to get them motivated and excited and to want to be there and to learn and to grow. Because that's really truly what it's all about. And I really do. I love that that expression from Thomas Jefferson, because I think it's so critical to where we are today and why reading books. I mean, Thomas Jefferson was a bookworm. He read and read and read. And you cannot be ignorant and free. And we see what's happening to our culture at large. A lot of it's because of poor education. We have not properly educated our children. And it's been to the detriment of all of us in many, many respects. So anyway, that is a gift, excuse me, to do that. Now I'm going to ask one other question. And I see Karen out there. Other people that are out there, if you call in, it's 347-857-4364. Call in, push the number one, then you can ask some questions when we get to that point. We want this to just be a very open discussion about public education, the school superintendent, and why Lawrence Pender is the best person for the job. With that being said, I'll put out there, what are some of your concerns in the current direction in Jackson County Public Schools? Excuse me. Jackson County Public Schools today. What are some of the things that we need to make changes now to make sure we do, just as I said, we educate these children and get them where they need to be?
I don't want to come in and just change things. What I want to do is come in and redirect and fine-tune things. Most of the schools, I applied for the first job that I got, and most of the other schools, with the exception of Franklin County and Holmes County, I was just sent there because there was a need. Some of those schools, nobody else wanted to go there. And when I got to those schools, I've been criticized by one of my opponents about it's always I with me. Well, I was the one sent into the school, and I'm the one that had to correct things. Now, once I got there, I created a team and made it a wee thing, but I still had to create a structure. I had to still put parameters in place and motivate people into getting them to do what I thought needed to be done. And to do that, I needed buy-in. And to get buy-in, you make people a part of so that they can show ownership, and you constantly guide. And then when you have a breakdown, you can't give up, you can't quit, you don't lose your all hope, because everybody's watching you. Everybody's keying on your emotions. I remember when Hurricane Michael came, and I've had several former students say this, several former employees, "Mr. Pender, you came to work with a smile every day." We didn't have power for almost 30 days. I was boiling water for my children to take a bath. We were having to go elsewhere to wash clothes and buy groceries. We had a generator, but I came to work every day with a smile. And when I was sent there, I was told, "They need you." They were a low-performing school. It was a low C, and I was determined to make that school an A. And so I went to work every day. I smiled. I went around and spoke to children. I was constantly motivating, constantly boosting kids up to do what they needed to do. And a lot of those kids were living in houses where there was no power, some of them no running water. And we did what we needed to do. My team, people got to work doing what they needed to do. We had a clothes closet. We had lines for food. We were constantly reaching out. If a bus couldn't ride down a dirt road because of water or something, somebody drive out and pick up children. but we did what it took to get those kids what they needed. And that year, we made an A. And I'm very happy with what we did. But it takes a lot. And in Jackson County, I've graduated lawyers, doctors, pharmacists, engineers, accountants, school teachers, firemen, police officers, business owners, all sorts of professional people. And the thing that sets those kind of students apart is usually when they come out of middle school and high school, they have an idea of what they want to do or some sort of idea of what they want to be. And they start preparing themselves. They take upper-level courses. They get into clubs. They do other things. They set themselves up for scholarships. They dual enroll, some of them early admit, so that by the time they get to college, they're on their way. Those other kids that don't know need some guidance. They need to be pushed or pointed in a direction. And there's a big push now. I remember when vocational programs went away over a decade ago. Now they're wanting to bring them back. Well, the problem with those vocational courses is we're waiting till these kids are in 11th or 12th grade to direct them or send them in that direction. By that time, they've not gotten everything they need to be successful. They've failed a few classes. They're tired of school. They've gotten old enough that they're ready to be out of school, and they don't have a path. I want to start that early. I want to start maybe at the end of middle school or in middle school, start talking to those kids about what you want to be later. If they don't like reading, if they don't like testing, if they don't like math. I hated math. I failed algebra in the 10th grade. Now, I can do simple arithmetic. I can tell you how much I owe and how much somebody else owes me. But I don't like math. And I have a calculator. My brother is a wealthy man. He doesn't like to read. Now, he can tell people how to do. He can motivate people. He knows how to make money. But he doesn't like to read. He can read directions, but it's not something he does for fun. I have this thing that I always ask new English teachers. I'll say, who are your favorite authors? Inevitably, always one of them says William Shakespeare. And I always ask the question, okay, you tell me how you're going to teach me William Shakespeare because I can't stand it. And I've had teachers that could teach William Shakespeare. When I was at Grand Ridge, I was told after the test that one of the questions on the 7th grade test was about puffins. Do you know what a puffin is?
No.
I'm asking you a question. You don't know what a puffin is? You could quote Thomas Edison and all these other high achievers, and you don't know what a puffin is?
Why don't you share with everybody?
I've never heard of one. It's a little tiny bird that lives on Pacific atolls in the South Pacific. A little tiny bird. Well, half the kids at my school didn't know what a puffin was, but they had to read a cold read on puffins. Well, half those kids did because a fifth grade teacher had done a section on puffins in fifth grade. And so those children were prepared. And that goes back to good teaching, but not all the people that those children had earlier were the best teachers. And there are a lot of reasons for that. But, I mean, there's a lot to this, and there's a lot of stuff that people don't know. And what I think makes me more viable for this position, I've been a pre-K principal. I've been a kindergarten, first, second, third, fourth, and fifth grade principal. I've been a middle school principal. I've been a high school principal. I've been a principal at an alternative school. I have been a pre-K through fifth grade school. I've worked at a kindergarten through 12 school. I've worked at a sixth grade through 12 schools. I've worked at a 5 through 8 school, and I've worked at 9 through 12 schools. And I have experience. And the most important thing that we can do is create a foundation for those pre-K and kindergarten kids and then build up. But when you go into a school, when I go into a new school, my top priority is my seniors because they've got to pass state tests to get a diploma to graduate. And oftentimes they've taken those tests over and over and over again, and they've not been successful. And that's where you come in with some remediation and some motivation. And you motivate them and let them know how much you care. And that's what makes the difference.
It makes a very big difference. And I'm going to mention one other thing, and then I want to get Karen in here. The part of what you're saying, it's a matter of It's education, not indoctrination. You know, we had what has happened over with public education over the years. It's just really been so sad, and we're needing people just as yourself to turn it around. We need to get back to what education really was about. And education, it's not a matter. It's Common Core end up being some kind of a training program, and the difference of being educated versus being trained. And I think a lot of people don't truly appreciate or understand what that is. Educating is teaching someone how to think and how to find answers and how to explore and to build and develop, which all goes into the imagination and the motivation to do other things. Yeah, go ahead.
Let me tell you a caveat to that. The problem that most teachers have, I know Jackson County is full of amazing teachers. We've got really good leaders, but we also, those children also have to pass state tests. They have to pass the state test to move up a grade in some instances. They have to pass the state test to graduate in some instances. And our teachers only have so much time to get them what they need to pass that test. And our teachers' evaluations are based on those tests. And some of our teachers are such good teachers that they always get the lower performing kids. And some of those kids are not going to ever pass that test, but they make gains. And the gains are what are important to me because that's where you make your school scores. I've earned help schools earn 5 A's and 8 B's. I've been deemed a turnaround principal by the Department of Education. But you've got to be able to make those gains, but you've only got so much time to do it. And the most important thing for those children is getting that diploma. And back to myself and my brother, I hated school, but I loved to read. I hated math. But I wanted to graduate school. I didn't want to let my parents down. And I've used that diploma to get where I am today. My brother hated to read, but he got that diploma. And he is where he is today because we were taught how to work. We were taught to be economical. We were taught to be thrifty. We were taught to get up and go. When we were little, you didn't have downtime and you didn't take vacations. You worked. And in school, yeah. A lot of these children need to be taught how to work, and not just a job, taught to do homework. Let me ask you a question. Now, I'm fixing to give something away, and I hope nobody uses this against me, but I want you to tell me, what's the easiest way to make good grades? You get three guesses, and if I'd have known this back in the 1970s or 80s, I could have been a billionaire. I'd have had a television infomercial. So I've been selling programs. You, don't you, and you get Karen to help you out. She can be your lifeline. I want you to tell me how to make good grades. I have had 7 people answer this correctly one time, and I've been asking this question. And next week, I've got 100-something new kids coming, and I'm going to teach them first day of school how to make good grades. So let's do this. We're going to give you a little test. What's the easiest way to make good grades? I hope you get it right the first time, but go ahead and try. There's no wrong answer, and this isn't a trick question. Tell me what you think.
Well, to attend the class and learn and study. I mean, I don't think it's one thing. Yeah.
Well, listen. I'm gonna be official. We're on talk radio.
Well, Karen's out there. Do you want her to go ahead and give an answer?
Y'all can sit there and answer together, but I only need one of you talking. All right. You said you got to go to school and you got to study and work. Correct.
Yes.
Okay, that's very important.
But
I've had children that no matter how hard they study, they can't get it. I've had children that have worked and worked and worked and just couldn't get it. But then I've had some children that barely did any work and barely did any studying and got it from the get-go. They're going to get it no matter what kind of teacher they got. So there's a better answer, so I want you to try again.
Come on now, you got two more. Obviously, I should go to class and study.
You got two more attempts.
Okay. Karen, go ahead. Karen, I know you're out there.
I was on mute.
Oh, okay.
All right. She's got two more guesses. Give her a lifeline.
Okay, my answer would be that you have to be involved in what you're learning. And you have to feel good about yourself. And be able to absorb the skills that are being taught. If you're not involved in what you're learning, then there's no point. because you won't learn.
That's very true. But I've had children that because of where they live, the condition or state that they lived in, it was extra hard for them to learn. I've had children that because they didn't get proper accommodations could not learn. And then I've had children before just because of what was going on around them, they couldn't learn. And you've got to be involved. That's the best way to teach. Get your children involved. Have a project. Let them do hands-on. But a lot of times that gets cut out because we've still got so many days to pass that state test. You've got to get in so much. And I know the trick to passing that test. So that wasn't the best answer. So y'all give me one more try.
Oh,
come on, girl.
See. Well,
y'all hold
well, you memorize the answers. They'll steal the answers.
Well, what did they get out of it? I've known people that memorized it. But usually when you just memorize something, you forget it immediately.
You don't learn it. That's right.
It's when you put it, when you make it applicable that you put it in your long-term memory. All right, y'all ready? Let me tell you the easiest way to make good grades, and I'll give you an example.
That's fine. Otherwise, I was going to say that you have to be able to read. If you can't read, it's not going
to
make any difference. And that's what I feel is. Yep.
But you don't have to always enjoy reading to be successful. You've got to be able to read the questions. And the problem with reading now with us, it's not just reading literature. They've got to be able to read the math vocabulary.
Everything.
From fourth grade up, they have word problems. So not only do you have to know the reading vocabulary for literature, you've also got to know math vocabulary to answer word questions. But I'm going to give you here's the easiest way, and I'll give you an example. The easiest way to make good grades, and I teach this to children all the time, is to do what the teacher says. That simple.
Follow directions.
If the teacher, you've got to do what the teacher says. And this happens a lot with middle school age boys. It happened to myself. Teacher would come in Monday and say, hey, you got a test on Friday. Well, if you're a good student, you go home and study 10 or 15 minutes every day. If a teacher gives you 10 math problems, you go home and do them. Well, you're probably going to get a homework grade, or those problems are on a test you're going to take soon. When I was in school, I studied on the bus on the way to school the day of the test, or I didn't even study at all. Or I didn't even do half the math problems. I just winged it. I know some people that copied them in the lunchroom or on the bus going to school, and they didn't learn anything. I had a student at one of my schools, and he came in February one day, and he said, Mr. Pender, I'm not going to graduate next May. And I said, why not? He said, well, my teacher's failing me. And I said, is she failing you or are you failing her? He said, well, I guess I'm failing her. I said, all right, we're going to set us up a parent conference, and we're going to see what we can do for you. Because we got February, March, April, and May. We got 4 months. So I called his parents in. I called the teacher in. I spoke with the parents before the meeting. I spoke with the teacher before the meeting. And we got in. I let the teacher tell what she thought the problem was. I let the parents tell what they thought the problem was. I let the young man tell his part of it, and I looked at the teacher, and I said, what do we need to do to help this young man pass? And she said, well, if he'll come to my classroom 3 days a week before school and let me help him with his homework, I think he'll do better. And the kid's eyes got real big, and he looked at his parents. They looked at me, and I'm just nodding, yep. So parents, the teacher says what she says. The parents thank me, thank her. And everybody walks out, and the little boy says, Mr. Pender, do I really have to come to school early? I said, do you want to graduate? He said, yes, sir. I said, you better come to school early. So after about, I checked on him every other day. After about 2 weeks, he comes in. He says, Mr. Pender, she wants me to come after school. And I said, okay, let's do it. He said, Mr. Pender, I work. I said, do you want to graduate? Yes, sir. I said, we better start coming after school. So he comes after school. Well, it gets May. And his grade isn't an F anymore. It's a high C. And the night of graduation, when he hugged me, he picked me up off the ground. Now, that teacher bent over backwards for him because he met her halfway. He finally tried. But it took that conversation to make it happen. I've been having those conversations with children for the last 28 years. And I think we need to incorporate that in what we do.
Yes, definitely. And, you know, trust in, we can talk a little bit about what's happened with education and teachers, some of the craziness that goes on and what teachers are being told. There's some weird stuff going on out there in general in education. I think Florida is actually doing better than some, but I'm not going to go and say too much on that. But I do want Karen, I've been asking all the questions, and you are a former teacher. You know it all too well.
Thank you for letting me ask some questions.
No problem. You'll get another chance.
All right. Maybe I'll do better next time.
Yes. Listen to the teacher. Yes, I couldn't agree more. Lawrence, I noticed that in most of the districts, I probably due to money, vocational training has gone. And one of the things that I used to do as a teacher was teach my kids math because I taught them how to cook. And you have to follow directions and you have to learn about fractions. So how do you feel about vocational education?
Well, I mentioned it briefly beforehand. I'm where I am because of a vocational program, agriculture. I gave my first public speech in 10th grade. I was in FFA. I was the treasurer, and I had to get up before a district meeting and say a line, and I forgot it, and I was so embarrassed. I still, when I go to FFA meetings, I still say that saying station at the Emblem of Washington to children because I've remembered it all these years. But my brother, he had his first cattle project, livestock project, in the 9th grade. Now, we had raised calves before that, but he had to keep records, and he had to do those things that he needed to do to get a grade and be successful. He owns 1,800 cows now, but it started in a vocational program. Years ago, schools moved away from vocational programs because they wanted to prepare them for college. Well, they're not all going to college. We're going to have to prepare them for life. And if we figure out early on that they're not college bound, then we need to provide some opportunities for them and interest them. I heard somebody say that we needed to open a vocational school in Jackson County. Chipola's got a great vocational program. I mean, they've got an excellent vocational program. If our schools could create some classes and align those kids to what those classes require so that they're bound, bent, and determined when they get out, they can get into HVAC, auto mechanics, welding, cosmetology. I had a former student from Cottondale High School pull over today. And she had her daughter with her. And whenever I meet children, I say, what grade's you in? She was in 8th grade. And I say, what you want to be when you grow up? Well, she wants to be a nurse and a cosmetologist. And I thought, that's wonderful. Now, as a school teacher, when school got out in the afternoon, I came home and broke horses or fed cows or split firewood. At spring break, I went down to Panama City and drove a parasail boat. When school got out, I drove a parasail boat all summer, and then I came home in the fall, and I started cutting and splitting firewood to sell it. I not only taught school, I had side jobs. Well, if that little girl can get her cosmetology certification, she can get certified to do hair, she can do hair while she's going to nursing school. And then when she becomes a nurse, if she wants to do hair for girls for weddings or other things like that, that's extra income, and it's just a plus. And my own son, he took a building trades course this last year at Mariner High School. A friend of mine, Chris Franklin, put it together. And he's got some really great instructors. And my son loves those men. He loves them. When I was starting to build signs last fall, we were up at my barn, and my son Ike says, Daddy, you're not using that saw properly. And I looked at him. I said, I've been using this saw like this for your whole life. He said, but that's not the right way to use it. And then I was doing something. He says, Daddy, you need safety goggles. And then I did something. He said, Daddy, you need some of this. And Daddy, you need this. He learned it all in that course. Well, now he's thinking about getting some certifications, but also maybe going to business school so one day he can be in a trade and have his own business. He mentioned last night maybe being a civil engineer. And I'm like, wow, this is great. He's got a direction. He's got a path to follow. We've got something we can build on. And that's what we need for these kids that are struggling in middle school. That's what we need for those kids that don't have a dream or that don't have a direction they want to go in. Not just create a school and expect them all to jump in it and do it. We've got to provide them with a goal, set some goals for them and give them a direction, and then help them along. When they start slowing down, or when they get to a point where they just want to give up, encourage them and keep going. And then what our county's going to have to do is bring in some business so we can have some jobs. There's a big picture here, and every bit of it starts in pre-K and kindergarten.
Karen, do you have another question, or are you ready? What's another question?
Yes. I also wanted to ask you, we, of course, live in an area where guns are the norm. And I remember quite a while ago when having a gun in the truck was not a big deal and kids would go to school, but they understood how to use them. Would you object, or how would you feel about having a program, not necessarily in school, but could be outside school, but sponsored by the school in conjunction with the sheriff, where you're teaching the high schoolers the proper use of guns?
Well, I'm so happy you asked that question. At Holmes County High School, two of my teachers teach a hunter safety course. And before a child can get a hunting license, they've had to get gone through a hunter safety course and get a certification. In Holmes County, they do it at Holmes County High School. And I would love for every high school in Jackson County to have that sort of program so that our children know how to handle guns safely. I grew up with guns. My father taught me at an early age how to hold a gun. I always had to check a gun, where never to point a gun, where never to shoot a gun. And a lot of these children don't see it. And times have changed. These people, I was told a long time ago by a dear friend, Lawrence, you were school safety when safety wasn't cool. When safety wasn't cool, I bought the first fence at Sneed, put the first fence up in the back of Graceville High School. I put enough fence up to be secure at Sneed's High School. I've purchased security cameras. I've put fence up everywhere. I've created plans at every school. The week before the shooting down in South Florida, we had an open shooter drill at Graceville Elementary School, and my children knew what to do. And I say that, we had a substitute teacher. She didn't know what to do. The students in her class secured the door, closed the blind, shut the light off, and got over in their safe space without an adult telling them what to do. They told the adult in that class what to do. And I'm all about school safety. And, I mean, when I was a boy, some kids might have had a gun in the car. We can't take those chances anymore because there are those people out there. And a lot of people just don't care anymore. And these people that perpetrate these crimes, they don't learn to shoot from their daddy. They learn it on video games. And on those video games, they're killing other people. And so life doesn't mean much to you anymore. And so we've got to do something to secure our schools. Now, one of my opponents has talked about putting guardians at every school. Guardians have to volunteer. To be a guardian, you've got to volunteer to go through rigorous training. And then once you've been through that training, you've got to swear an oath to run to that danger. You've got to run to that gunfire to protect your school, protect your children, protect your teachers. And that's a lot to ask somebody, especially somebody that's raising small children or that has elderly parents that they take care of. And, I mean, there's just a lot involved. And if we can teach our children gun safety, hunter safety, get them their certification, I think it's a win-win for everybody.
If there, nobody else has another question, I have another question.
All right.
Yeah, there are two other callers out there, just so you know. So go ahead with your question, Karen, then we'll get to the two other callers that are with their hands up.
Okay. I have done a deep dive in the grades. I spent a lot of time. I was on the committee to bring civics education back into the schools. I went through a multitude of textbooks, working with the Department of Education, and I also was on a special program. And what I noticed is that everyone focuses on X number of people, and anywhere from 79 to 85% of the kids graduate. and yet only 47% is going to continue right and do math, and it's less in math. So what do you do to improve those scores? Because Florida grades on a curve, which is quite different when you are out in the rest of the world. Your boss is not going to tell you, well, you did a great job because everybody else did a horrible job. If you did a horrible job just because you were the best at doing a horrible job, that doesn't count. So what can we do to improve the score so that when the kids graduate, they are prepared for life? Because I believe the skills that are being taught are not the skills that they need for their life.
Well, what teachers are teaching or what the state requires them to teach to pass those tests, and they feel that those things on that test are what make those students successful later. Now, I could go on and on and on about testing, and here's how I ultimately feel about it. Before a person can become a doctor, they've got to pass a board exam. Before a person can become a magistrate, an attorney, they've got to pass a bar exam. Before you can become a licensed driver, you've got to pass a driver's exam. Before you can become a school teacher, you've got to pass a teacher certification exam. Before you can be a licensed principal, you've got to pass what they call the FELE. So we take tests wherever we go. Accountants have to take tests. Engineers have to take tests. And most of those people, including teachers, have to go through continuous training continuous training. But you asked the question about, you were talking about civics, and then you got into test scores, and those are two separate beasts.
Yes,
so break the question up, and let me give you two answers.
Okay. One would be, what do you feel about bringing civics? We have to bring, our kids do not understand how our country works. They don't understand about what America is about,
yep.
And they don't understand what their role should be. Because this is up to them, and it's their country.
Almost 30 years ago, when I was a classroom teacher, I taught social studies. And as a bell ringer activity, I had a friend who just become a citizen. He was originally from Canada. And I took the citizen's test that he had to study for and take, and I taught that to the children. And this is back in the 1990s. You would be amazed at how many of those children didn't know a lot of those answers. And that man had to learn to become in order to become a U.S. citizen. Well, most American government books, I remember there was a push back when we had FCAT to teach American history in ninth grade. Well, a lot of principals opted to teach American history in ninth grade. I mean, American government ninth grade. The kids didn't do well because those American government books were written for older, senior-aged children. Now, back to the civics part, and I'm certified to teach civics. I've taught civics. To most seventh graders, civics is a boring subject. And so a good teacher, a successful teacher, has got to find a way to interest those kids so that they do learn the civics. And one thing that we could do to make that better, right now you teach world history in sixth grade, you teach civics in seventh grade, and American history in eighth grade. Well, a lot of eighth grade American history is civics. We could simply start teaching American history in eighth grade. They'd get half their civics and then finish off civics in the seventh grade and possibly do better. But you'd have to do that at a district level. It would be easy at a small school to fix, but you can't do it at a big school. But that's an idea. Back to the civics, you've got to make it interesting to seventh graders, 13-year-olds, 12-year-olds, 14-year-olds, and then you'd be more successful. Now, in high school, it was hard enough teaching American government to 12th graders. It's hard teaching economics to 12th graders, but I thought it was important. And as a good teacher, I would put my spin on it so that they got what they needed to be successful. And that's just the part of the art of being a good teacher. Now, back to your grades and kids graduating from school, we've got to start in kindergarten. And let me tell you what happens. And this may have changed in the last 4 years, but I don't think it has. I've been in other districts. But we get kids that cannot do all their sight words in kindergarten, and so they're retained. They go through another year of kindergarten so they can learn those words. Then they go into first grade, and they struggle a little, but they make it. They go into second grade, and they struggle a little, but they make it. And then they get into third grade, and they can't pass that third grade test. Well, they've already failed kindergarten. Now they fail third grade. They're going to be held back. You can only fail elementary twice. So when they go into fourth grade, they can't fail again, no matter what. They go into fifth grade, they can't fail again, no matter what. So now they're in sixth grade. They're in middle school, and they're starting to take classes. You're taking English class. You're taking math class. You're taking science class. You're taking social studies class. And a lot of those kids have never been successful taking that state test. They've not got the remediation they need. So they start failing a class here or there. They may fail sixth grade. They move up to sixth grade after they get those classes passed, and then they fail a couple of classes, and they get retained. And so all of a sudden, they're 15 years old in the eighth grade, maybe even 16 years old in the eighth grade. And I've talked about this before, Karen. You heard the same conversation at one of those Republican meetings. When they get into 10th, ninth grade and they turn 16 or 17, their chances of graduating are not very good. And here's why. You're 16 in the ninth grade, which means you're 17 in the 10th grade, 18 in the 11th grade, 19 in the 12th grade. Well, 19 years old, that's old enough to go to war. That's old enough to die for your country. They used to be old enough to drink. And they're sitting in classes, and they're still struggling because they've never been successful in another state test, and they've not gotten the remediation they need. And so we start giving them ACT and TSAT and now the CLT. And they have to pass those to get a concordance score. Well, when I was down at Franklin County, we had kids that were in high school that were 18 and 19 years old in 10th and 11th grade, ninth grade. And I knew that year because of COVID, we'd get a waiver. And so I created a credit recovery program, and they called it the Seahawk Success Center. Well, we got those kids in there, and I had this lady, Miss Mary, and she was just a para, but she gave some hard love. She mothered those kids, but she was very demanding of what they did. She told them, this is what you've got to do. And we worked those kids, and they passed those classes so that they could graduate that year. They didn't have to pass the state test. Well, the next year we were going to have to pass the state test, so we put a remediation component in there, and we start remediating those kids and getting them. I put them with some, I call them angels, some ladies, some teachers that could get to them. I had this young man that wanted to be a teacher. He was a para. We had him in a class. And they're constantly working with those kids. And then we let those kids that finished their classes, got their credit, work with those other kids to help them pass the tests. Well, this last fall, when I found out that the state of Florida had this CLT, critical learning test, I'm like, we need every one of our seniors who've not passed state tests need to take this test. Every one of them. And every one of them that took it passed it, and they all graduated. But that takes somebody that knows how to work those things, that knows or can see the direction we're going in to get those things done. And, I mean, if we can get these kids early on, if we can get them the remediation they need early, find out what they need, find out what accommodations they need, then they're going to be more successful. At every school I've been to, every school I've been sent to, Franklin County, Holmes County, there's always been a senior that had good grades but had never passed state tests. And when I've done some research, when I've gotten to know the children, and when I've found out what they needed, it was a matter of doing the paperwork to get them the accommodations they need to graduate. Most of those kids were good kids. They were good students. They had good grades because they met the teacher halfway, like that kid did years ago that I told you about earlier, and they wanted to be successful. The teachers helped them. They accommodated them. They naturally do. They want to teach, but it still didn't give them that little extra edge that they needed to pass state tests, and that's what we've got to do for all of our children. I had a teacher years ago. Ma'am?
Oh, I was just going to say, I couldn't agree more. But I also feel that the curricula is at fault because what we are not doing is teaching heavy doses of phonics in K through 3. And
yes,
I found that when that was done, the reading ability of the students was so greatly improved because right now they're teaching a program that's a failed program, and it's a whole word reading where the kid has to recognize the word and then memorize words and be able to memorize the patterns of words when they should be working on the sounds of the letters, and that would, I believe, improve the reading. So would you be open to that?
I learned to read with phonics, and my wife tells me all the time, you can't spell because you learned to read with phonics. I spell phonetically. I had a professor at graduate school. He said, Mr. Pender, you write really great papers, but you can't spell. I said, sir, just sound it out. It'll be correct. But because of the phonics, I know you may ask me a word, and I can't tell you the exact meaning, but by its usage and how I've read it so many times and so many facets, I can give you a roundabout answer about what it is. I have people do it to me all the time, but I think we need phonics. The problem is, for us to use it, it's got to be state accredited. And I know we've talked about that before, but schools have to be accredited, and we've got to get these kids everything they need so that the state gives them what they need. And I've been into failing schools before, and I've had directors come in and say, oh, you're going to teach this with fidelity. Well, if it's not what I thought worked, I would get my teachers what worked, but we'd still be following that other program to keep everybody happy. And I don't mind doing that at a district level, but we have got to do what we can to help these children. And I tell people this all the time, and I know both of you are years younger than me, but I am part of the last generation of people. Ma'am?
You said I wish.
Well, I am part of the last generation of people in this country that can just get out of school and go to work and get a good job and make a good living. Most of these children are going to have to be able to pass certification tests. They're going to have to be able to pass diagnostic tests. They're going to have to be able to work. When I first became a teacher, the military would send in these recruiters, and they would sign up everybody they could to go into the Marines or the Army. They don't do that anymore. They want honor graduates. 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, they wanted soldiers. They wanted riflemen and infantrymen. Now the military wants those smart kids that can press a button and blow up people 2,000 or 3,000 miles away. They want people that can work on nuclear submarines. They want people that can run aircraft carriers or these tanks that can blow up something out of sight. And so we've got to prepare our kids for that.
Well, you know, and that's where I really think goes back to that training versus education. I think our system has been manipulated, and this is where, we've got the two other callers, I'll make sure I get them in here, where I'm also looking for someone who's going to truly be critical of how we have destroyed education, public education today, by some of these things. I need someone who's going to say, give me the ammo, if you will, to go up to the state and say, this is why the kids are failing. They're being trained. They're not being educated. They don't know how to reason. Just the different things I talk to kids. I mean, I've talked to college, high school graduates for sure, and even some college ones who don't know who George Washington is. They don't know how to balance a checkbook. They don't know the most basic of skills. And so much, there's
probably,
so many other cultural issues. Yeah. What's that?
They probably don't even know how to write in cursive either.
They don't either, because we keep marginalizing what education is. We keep lowering it, and this is where I say they're trained, not educated. Being educated is giving you the ability to learn, to think, to investigate, to learn, to be able to go out there. Maybe I don't know this, but here's how I can go learn this on my own. But if you're trained, you sit there like a puppet. You don't know what you're supposed to do next. And unfortunately, this is what's happened with many, to me, in education as a general rule today. And it's all been part of a crazy plan of this cultural change we're going through, that we have to, you don't want to make the school political in that sense. It is. We all know that kind of stuff. But we have to call out, what is the truth? Why are these kids not learning the real stuff? And, you know, going back to the civic stuff, I know when I was going to school, which was a few years ago, we were taught you vote. You go out there and you vote. You're going to elect a representative, and they're going to go speak on your behalf and la, 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 this kind of stuff. They never once told me about going to a public hearing and say, here's what they're doing and here's questions you should ask them. They never taught me anything about how to really engage with the government that's supposed to represent, because I am truly supposed to be the boss. They're supposed to do what we want them to do. But most we've dumbed down people so much they don't even understand that they're supposed to reach out to their representatives and these people in government. And you just think about that in general terms of how that has impacted our whole country. And, again, I'm not trying to get into all the other political stuff, but education is key to what has happened to this country. If you don't truly appreciate how this downgrading Common Core training program has hurt us as a society and as a culture, you know, I think there's a gap there. Then we need to face up what has truly harmed the kids. And this all goes into the parents' engagement, the schools taking over, raising the kids. School isn't supposed to be a daycare center, and unfortunately it's turned out to be that in many cases for many families. And I'm sure you've seen that. Not if you, it's up to you to comment on that kind of thing. But we got to get back to the core fundamentals. If you can't read and write, forget the rest of it. If you can't read and write and do basic math, the other, you know, it's and if you don't understand what your role is as a citizen and as a part of the society. And I too, when I went to school, I worked part-time jobs. I was able to babysit. I was able to do things like that. Right now, a kid that goes and has a lemonade stand and they get harassed. Kids aren't allowed to go mow lawn. I mean, there's so many other things that are involved that make up what that child is going to be and that role that that school is supposed to motivate and inspire and truly educate. Now, I don't know if you want to comment on that. You're welcome to, but I do have two callers out here, so I want to make sure I get them in here.
I told you I'd talk for an hour, and we've run out of time, and I've listened to you.
Ooh,
now,
okay.
I'm going to ask you a question. I'm a history teacher, and I've been around, and I've done a lot of stuff, and I didn't learn what I do at school, teacher school. I want you to tell me when you think the good old days were, because at your age, you've been told, yes, they like the good old days. When do you think the good old days were?
They were a long time ago.
Think hard. When?
They.
In the 1950s. Do you know why that is the most common answer?
No, I don't know why, but that was when I went to school.
Yes, ma'am, but you think about what this world had been through a decade earlier.
The Great Generation.
It had been through a Holocaust. Well, it had been through a depression. It had been through a pandemic. It had been through a depression. It had been through a Holocaust. It had been through two world wars. And all those things changed our society. And then you had communism. And with the rise of communism, they wanted America to be great. They wanted it to look great. You had Ozzy and Harriet. And you had all of these things out there pushing it to be great. You also had all these women who had been in the workforce who were now displaced. And you had all these men, some of them shell-shocked, PTSD, which didn't even exist, coming back, and they've got to make places for them. And so you start painting this beautiful picture, and then you got the 60s and all this civil unrest and Vietnam, and then you have a oil embargo. And, I mean, I tell children all the time.
I want to inject one thing because I know we're running out of time here. And what you're saying, what I refer to as the Mimi syndrome. And this is truly after what you said, the good old days when we were prospering and we were we had a generation, and this is the baby boomers, where all of a sudden we were so prosperous that the families, the parents were doing everything for the kids, giving things to their kids. It created that Mimi syndrome.
Do you know what caused that?
Well, I would say success, the prosperity from.
Do you know what the words depression psychology are? Do you know what depression psychology is?
Yeah, would I be able to teach a course on it? No, but I have the basic understanding of depression a lot.
Let me tell you what depression psychology is. Our greatest generation grew up in a depression, and there is no specific date when the depression ended. There's no specific date. And I remember back at the year 2000, Y2K was going to come. And all of those people that grew up in the Depression were saying, all right, it's back. We told you it was coming. People that grew up in the Depression never threw anything away. They were thrifty. then you had to work with their hands because they had to. But because of that, the next generation suffered because those people wanted their children to have it better than they did.
Right.
And so it was a little bit less push. Well, then that next generation, which would have been my father's generation, wanted their children to have it a little bit better. And so, you know, you didn't just get a present at Christmas and your birthday. You might get a reward in the year. And then that next generation, which is me, wanted our children to be a little bit better. And you were talking about children not knowing how to work and children this and children that. I had a lemonade stand. Both of my boys know how to cut grass. Both of my boys have cut grass for money. Cut it for me for free. I sold firewood in college. Both of my boys know how to use a chainsaw and cut wood. Both of my boys know how to put up a fence. Both of my boys know how to handle a customer my father's hardware store. Both of my boys have jobs down in Panama City with my brother, renting out pontoon boats or driving dolphin tours and working for tips, because that's how we raised them. That's how my daddy raised us. And so a lot has to do with what goes on at home. What we've got to do as educators, and you mentioned daycare, and we've got to raise them, and we got to this. We've got to give them everything we can in school to make them successful. And I have a plan for doing that in Jackson County. Now, back to the other part of what you were talking about, I could talk national politics with you all day. I could go in and say this, and I used to say, I wouldn't mind talking to the governor, to the president. I don't care. I tell them what I think. But what I've got to do right now is fix Jackson County. I can't deal with what's going on nationally. I can't make broad statements. I've got to find a way to make it better for the kids in Jackson County. Graceville, Snead, Cottondale, Mariana, Malone, Bascom, Two Egg, Dalewood, Lovedale, Jacob, Browntown, all those places are what matters most. Greenwood, those are the places that matter to me. And those children matter to me. And getting them what they need so that they can be successful is paramount to what I'm doing, to what I want to do. And I have trained myself, and I've sacrificed to be better at what I do so I can make it happen. And you can look at my track record. I mean, I'm not perfect, and I'm not bragging on myself, but what I do works. And usually what I do, I have to do with what I have. And so what I want to do as superintendent is take what we have and work with it, give it a new direction, give it someplace else to go so that we can do more for our children. Now, I've gone 8 minutes over, and I still got two folks out there that want to ask questions. I have no clue what they're going to ask me, and I like to talk, and I'm ADHD, and y'all are killing me sitting here talking for an hour.
And we have so many more questions we could ask. But let me go ahead and
I don't mind talking to anybody about this stuff. I do it every day. I do it all day. But what I'm saying, and it's like I said when I started, I'm not reading a script. This is all coming from my heart. And the bad thing for me, sometimes it pops into my head and comes right out of my mouth. And I thought, ooh, I shouldn't have said that. But everything I said tonight, I mean. And I've enjoyed both of you. Let's get these other couple of folks so I can get back to work. I got to go do some stuff.
Okay. We've got Joe. We'll go with Joe and then Bianca. Hey, Joe.
Oh, yes. Hello. How you doing?
Hey.
Well,
how you doing?
First of all, I'm doing all right. Well, we have a problem in America. Number one is we don't. I'm calling from North Carolina. We have a problem in this country is that, first of all, we don't understand monetary policy. Okay, that's the biggest thing. And then the second thing is we don't understand our history. We don't understand because history is really not taught the right way. So how can we fix today when we don't understand what happened yesterday? Now, how the heck can we plan for the future? Now, I understand what you're saying about fixing your county and whatnot, and that's where it has to start locally. But how are we going to educate those are great values that you taught your youngins how to build fence, work and everything. That's great. But most of the people out there don't do that. So how can we help them to the other kids out there that don't have the role models in their the parents that are willing to teach them?
I'm a history teacher, and I've studied great leaders. And the greatest leaders that I've studied, they never asked anybody to do something that they wouldn't do themselves, and they led by example. And we can't just change our society. like I said, I talked about depression psychology. I talked about those people wanting to make it better and better and better. And there's no way to fix that. But if we can start preparing our children. Now, like I'm a history teacher. I live in my great-great-granddaddy's house. I sleep in my great-granddaddy's bed. I can tell you history in Jackson County back 150 years. My father's store, it's an old general store. It's been open since 1869. I live history. But my daddy raised us to look forward. You can't change the past. Now, I heard somebody say one time, history doesn't repeat itself, but history is cyclical. Those same sort of events come all the time. We didn't just have one depression. There were a series of depressions several years before the Great Depression. We had a pandemic after World War One. You broke the law if you spit on the street, and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people died. But before that, they had the bubonic plague. I mean, those things have always been out there: mumps, measles, chickenpox, things people die from, cancer. But what we've got to do is look forward, and we can't indoctrinate. We've got to teach our children to be free thinkers, and to be free thinkers, they've got to get a variety of information. And I've had children that were, as school children, they were very, very, very conservative, and as adults, they're liberal. I've had children who, and I say children, my students, who were had liberal viewpoints, but as an adult, became conservative. And so we've got to allow them that opportunity. But I don't want anybody pushing something that I don't think is right. And back to us changing, things have got to change internationally for us to do better. When I grew up, where I'm from, farming was king. And, you know, one man and a tractor could farm 40 acres, and that was it. And now one man with a tractor can farm 2,000 because of all the technological advances. But those same technological advances are what caused the Great Depression. All these poor old farmers in the United States were pushed and pushed and pushed to create more grain and corn to supply the world because of the World War. And then we get out of the World War, and there's no more need for it anymore. And so they've worked themselves out of a job, and prices go to nothing. And that could very easily happen again. And things have got to change. Now, like I said, and I know you're up there in North Carolina. I'm down in Greenwood, Florida. I live just below the Georgia-Alabama border, about 65, 70 miles west of Tallahassee, so you can get an idea of where I am. We're still a rural community. And what we've got to do is save some of our rural values, but get our children what they need to compete internationally. Both of my boys are going to go to college, and whether they stay here or they go and live in Atlanta, Georgia, they're going to be able to successfully provide for themselves and their children. And I'd like to do that for the rest of these children. And if you'd like to call me, I'll give you my phone number so we can have a separate conversation about international stuff. But what I've got to focus on for the next 13 days is this primary election in Jackson County, because if I don't win that thing, I can hang it up and go back to being a principal. So if I've not answered your question, I'm sorry. But like I said, you can get my number from Karen after the show, and I'll be glad to talk with you about what I do and what we do, things that I've done to help other people raise their children. There's a lot involved. Children see things now that our age kids didn't see. They're exposed to things. When I was a senior in high school, I had to write a paper on Adolf Hitler. There was one book in the library about Adolf Hitler. I had to go to two different city libraries to get some other books to write that. A kid can press in ADO, and Adolf pops up for them, and then there's 300,000 hits where they can get information. Now, it's up to parents to decide what information they're getting to look at. I'm very careful with what my boys see and what they do, but I can't stop it all. And I remember the very first time I experienced cyberbullying. Some little girl had a flip phone, and somebody else was texting them on the flip phone back in 2003. And I had to deal with it. Now, you don't even have to touch the buttons. You can just talk into the phone and it does what you want to do. And you can block this and block that, and it's overwhelming. But a lot depends with your children, what they learn at home, what they've got going from behind them, what they've got bringing them up. And sometimes it falls upon the school to take that role. And
I wear a tie every day, except for Friday. I lead by example for my children. My rule is, if I can't do it, you can't do it. If you can't do it, I'm not going to do it.
Do you recite the Pledge of Allegiance at your school? Do you recite the Pledge of Allegiance at your school?
Yes, sir, and we put the flag up and take it down every day.
Good. Okay.
The question came up at another meeting was the prayer and the paddle.
I pray for folks every morning. I pray for folks
That's
every
good.
Morning.
That's excellent.
Most
Let
schools
me go
don't allow
question.
That.
Okay, Bianca, are you there? I'm taking advantage.
Yeah,
I know you stayed over as it is, and I do appreciate that. Yes,
yes,
question for the candidate for school superintendent.
You know, you made mention of something earlier, and he was right that this has to be taught early. And I run into, in my volunteer with a constitutional issue, I run into people that I'm trying to explain and get them to understand. They don't know anything about the U.S. Constitution.
No,
and I'm saying that this needs to be taught early as possible in your elementary school. And to take it further, any official running for elected office, if you're trying to get employed as a police officer, you must have passed a course on the Constitution and the founding documents of this country with at least an 80 percentile, because it causes a big problem. We see it all the time and don't have to get into detail. And as far as the children is concerned, a child needs to be assessed and surveyed what their inner abilities are. We do that with football combines, and basketball with basketball camps. So why come it's not done with that child to see what that child was born with? I did it with my kids, and my kids turned out became engineers. So
yes,
that's something that has to be done.
Yes,
okay,
sir.
Let him go ahead and respond.
Well, as an educator, we can only do what the law will allow us to do. We can only teach legally what the law will allow us to teach. And I agree with everything you're saying, but I get transfer kids in all the time, and some of them will have a folder with some background information. Most of them don't. And so I've got to determine right away, but those children have rights and their parents have rights. And so I've got to be very cunning on how I decide what I'm going to do, because my ultimate goal is to do what's best for that child. And I'm going to give any child a chance, any child. And I was told one time that I was the strictest principal in Jackson County. I had another superintendent tell me I'd sent more children to an alternative program than any other principals put together. And I said, but I didn't send them there for punishment. I sent them there for a second chance. Everybody deserves that second chance. Everybody deserves a time. And as a teacher, I've got to do everything I can to find what I need to do to teach that child. And all good teachers do it, but we've got to do it within the confines of the law and the rules that we work under. Biggest problem I've had, I worked in another district years ago, and we contracted the cleaning services out. And I didn't hear this, but I was told they couldn't get any employees because nobody could pass a drug test. I mean, there are a lot
Terrible.
Of things that we need to do to make things better.
Absolutely.
We need to have for everything. But what you say is true, but that's not something that I can make happen or I really can comment on. I'm going to do everything I can.
Let me ask you another question.
Ask me then.
If you got students coming from a home.
Wait, you're breaking up
background.
On me. Wait, talking to the phone, you're breaking up on me.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Where are you calling me from?
I'm calling from the deep south, down here where people is hospitable.
Where? That's where
Louisiana.
I am. Where are you calling from?
Louisiana.
What part of Louisiana?
Right outside of Baton Rouge.
Okay, well, we're almost parallel. I live in North Florida, just below the Alabama-Georgia border, so we're coming from the same kind of place.
Yeah, well, there ain't too many places left like this. But I was going to say this. If you got children that's coming from a background where all that is provided for their child, their child don't need to be sitting in a classroom where the other children is just the opposite. Because what you're doing is holding that one child back. They should be allowed to proceed forward and have what they need to take with them so that they can be successful.
Well, I had a teacher one time that talked to the top three kids in a class. And I looked at her one day and said, ma'am, you got 22 others. I need you to teach to every other one. I need you to teach to each child at their capacity. And she looked at me and she said, so you want me to teach to individual children? And I said, yes, ma'am, that's what I want you to do. And she became one of the best teachers I had. I had another teacher one time that she demanded so much out of her kids. Well, a lot of her kids were poor and impoverished. And so one day she came and she said, Johnny's missed my class the fourth time now. I want you to do something. I said, let's make a home visit. And so I took her to where he stayed. He lived in a little old one-room place with a mattress on the floor, with a dog with a litter of puppies nursing next to his little bed. And he didn't know where his daddy was, and his mama looked whacked out. And that's what he saw every day when he came home. And it completely changed how that teacher taught that child. But had I not taken her there, she'd have never known. And so many times you got to show people. But all of those children, regardless of where they come from, need to have an education. And I'm going to use myself. I hated school. I had teachers that, I mean, I remember all 28 trips to the office for paddling, corporal punishment. I was ADHD. I couldn't sit still. But I still deserved an education. And some of those teachers didn't give up on me. And some of those teachers pushed me. I went to adult ed last semester of my senior year. I had to sit through parent conferences and listen to all the bad stuff that I had not done and what I needed to do. And now I graduate children for a living. I've got almost two master's degrees. If I hadn't had children, I'd have gotten my doctorate. But every child deserves a chance. And I know this little boy, he couldn't talk till he was almost five, and his parents were told he would always need special services. That joke is going to school to be a dentist now. And I'm proud of him. But I've got dozens of stories like that where I'm proud of children for what they've become, what they've worked themselves out of, where they've come from. But as a teacher, I got to give them all a chance, and I'm going to try my best. And if they come to me and they've had problems at another school, I'm going to find a way for us to make them fit in. If they come to me and they've got a deficiency, I'm going to put them with somebody that can help them overcome that. I'm going to work for every child at that school. Look, the school I work at now, I greet every child when they come in, whether they get off the bus or they come by car. And I tell them good morning. I tell them have a good day. And I'm constantly looking at all of them. If they've got teary eyes, if they've got bags under their eyes, there's a new bruise, I'll send them to one of my angels so that they can talk to them, find out what's going on. If they come in a bad mood or they're mumbling under their breath, we pull them aside so they don't get in trouble later on that day. And I've done that at every school I've worked at. Now, I've never worked at a school with more than 1,000 kids. But I like small schools because as an administrator, you can know every one of your kids. They're not just a number. They're a face. They're a soul, and that matters to me. I check all of my children's progress reports every 3 weeks. I sign every one of their report cards. If they are A or AB honor roll, they get a star. If they've got a bad grade, I highlight it. I write down. I take notes. You could do this on a computer, but I think it's better if you do it. You personally write down their name and their bad grades, and then you tell them we need to have a conversation. You call parents, you go to the teachers, you talk to the guidance counselor, and you get everything you need for each one of those children. And then when it's time to take tests, you motivate. Let them know that they're not taking that test just for themselves. They're taking that test for you also. And those are the keys to success.
That's absolutely it. The kids, they're individuals. They can't be. Right now, it's like a production system, and we do, do so many things that the child is no longer the individual, which is another thing for the society. What we have done and how we have to get back to the individual. And there's so many more things. I know you've stayed over, and I do appreciate it. I don't know if you. We can easily go on for a while. What's that?
Listen, I could talk to y'all for 4 hours straight, but I got some stuff I got to do because I got to be out on the road tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock. And then I got to drive 40 miles to work, and then I got to get back out on the road.
We understand it. Okay. Well, the primaries are underway here in Florida, and we wish you all the luck. We definitely need the change. I really do enjoy talking. Thank you for taking the time. Thank you for taking the extra time. And, of course, we can, if you just have time and you want to continue this conversation, we can do that as well. But I know exactly how crazy it is when you're running for office. So thank you again. I really do appreciate it, and good luck with the election. And we
if he wins, he should come
again.
Back.
Yeah.
If he wins, he should come back.
Definitely.
I will talk to you anytime. You're welcome to get my personal number from Karen. I'll be glad to talk with you. I practice what I preach, and I love what I do, and my job is to save children. And I'm so proud of all of my former students, and I'm proud of my teachers. I'm proud of my schools. I'm proud of the teams that we've developed. And if you're listening to me from Jackson County, please vote for me on August the 20th. If you're early voting, vote for me tomorrow.
Thank you so much. And I did post your phone number out in the chat, 850-209-8964. People can call you, and then they can also go to lender4jcss@gmail.com. So they can definitely reach out to you, and you will tell them answer any questions they have.
Yeah, now let me tell you, if I'm in a meeting or a parent conference, I'm not going to answer, but I will call you back as quickly as I can, or you're welcome to send me a text and tell me who you are, and I'll text you when I get a chance.
Sounds good.
Y'all have a good night. Stay safe.
Thank you.
All right.
Nice. Excellent. Okay, well, I see Tabe was out there, and we didn't quite get to his question on the call. Lawrence Pender had told us he really only had an hour, so we got him for the better part of an hour and a half. So we can go ahead and review some of the things we discussed, but I'll get Tabe out here to see what his question might have been, and we can have a general discussion.
Man, I'm going to have to call him personally because I want to ask him how he feels about, because when he said he had 1,000 kids in his school for the population, which that's a pretty small school. Well, I graduated, I only had, I think it was 97 people in my class, my entire graduating class. What I wanted to ask him was, with how things are going in society today, with the controversy you see with kids that act up in class. Now, this is the biggest problem we have up here in Akron, is where one child in a classroom full of 50 kids, and that's about the average size of a classroom, not 20, not 15 like it was when I was in school, but one or two kids cause trouble. The teacher has to focus on the safety of themselves and the other kids, and it takes away from the education from everybody in that room, and it never gets discussed until there's actually a violent something goes on, and these teachers are put in a position where I can't remember if they passed it or not, but some of the teachers were wanted to carry guns. Well, if they went and took the training and got certified, what they were going to let them do it, but I don't know what happened with that. But it's the fact of the matter that when you have to worry about cell phones, distractions, and everything in class, that's not the two kids that we're worried about. It's the other 48 that aren't getting the attention of the basic education they're supposed to get through the system. It's not addressed. It's mind-blowing to me. And then you have the testing come out where the overall grades of how these kids are doing. They're in graduating kids in Akron, Ohio. They went to the LeBron James I Promise School. They can't pass 8th grade math. They haven't had one single student pass the test, the state test, in a school like that. That is absolutely... I can't even say it. But the thing is, I hate to hear like a guy like that where he's in a position where it can be real good if it's small. But, man, the threat of society, we've seen what it's come to in the mind, the transgender thing, you have a kid, and some of these kids understand this. They're not stupid, and they know that going into the classroom to distract, to cause the problem. That's totally unfair, and I wanted to ask him what he thought about it, how he would handle that, because are his classes that big, because that's what I see in the major cities, and that's where a lot of the problem with the indoctrination is. You have just nobody that can talk, or the kids aren't learning enough.
Yes. From one teacher. A little bit earlier in the call, we were Hold on one second. A little bit earlier in the call, I mentioned the indoctrination versus training versus education. What is school supposed to be for? And also the impact of the society, of culture. I'm hearing a lot of background noise. I'm not sure who that is. I think that's you, Taze. Is there any way you can put it on mute while you're not talking?
Yep.
It's just a lot of noise. The understanding, there's all these other elements. It's not in today's society, which he expressed to a certain degree, today's society, it's not a matter of going and reading, learning how to read. I mean, there's so many other factors that are impacting education. And we could have easily talked for another hour or so here. What the teachers are saying is the challenge that they have in the classroom, just like you're talking about there too. It's education has changed so much over the years. And we could get into the vaccines and of course all the perverted transgendering and all these other things. And he kept making, on several occasions he made reference to, I have to do what the state says. And I understand what he's saying there. That's the one who writes the rules. But we got to get past that problem there. We got to take back education, just like we have to take back this country in many respects. We have to take education back to what it's at the local level so that we can actually teach kids what they need to know, not all this other insanity that's going on. And, again, I'm hearing a lot of noise in the background.
And for them to have to worry about safety, they're just their safety, that the teacher themselves, you know, you see this, they get punched in the face, they get attacked, or you just other students in the classroom are getting attacked. And it's totally unfair to everybody, but, you know, I said it a long time ago that I believed in the program where you went to school. If you didn't have to, you get your basic reading, writing, arithmetic and stuff, but then to structure yourself, they should have a work program or some type of home economics or trades. You know, they don't have that in school anymore. I had wood shop, mechanical drafting, stuff like that. They even had a JVS, where I think a joint vocational school. You could go to cosmetology, auto body. These kids don't have that now. I feel sorry
I just recently learned. I just recently learned. Oops. Okay, Karen. Okay, Karen's still out there. I think she's still out there.
Yes. I can answer that question.
Go ahead.
I've spoken to him many times. He has a group. He calls them the Angels. And when a kid does or experiences that kind of behavior, or you know, is a problem in a classroom, they take them out. And then you can, because I was a dean when I was teaching for several years, I was a dean, and that's what I did. When there was a kid that was creating a problem for the teacher, I would come and take that kid out and then work with that kid and find out what the problem was, find out why they were doing what they were doing. And usually I could get them involved in something they liked, and get them to start reading, get them to start doing math, as long as it was something they liked to do. So I had books and things in my class, in my office, and if a kid liked flying, I would give them a book about flying, and you've got to change their attention from anger and hostility into
something
positive.
I was just going to say, you've got to distract them. Distract them from the problem that they're having and get them on a path. That is absolutely phenomenal.
So that was what we used to do. And Lawrence mentioned something like that. I don't know what his setup is, but they take the kids out of the classroom. In his school, they take the kids out of the classroom. If the kid is not having a bad day, it affects everybody else. But the whole thing really is that if you don't have them interested, it doesn't matter what you're doing. You've got to have them interested enough so that they want to learn. And right now, the emphasis is on not wanting to learn. They don't feel
the need.
And like
you said, he's great when he comes to the...
They are the ones that are the answer to everything. We have given them this me, I am wonderful, I know more than you attitude. And there's very little respect between a child and a teacher. And that comes from home, because there's very little respect from a child and their parents. And then
That's actually a combination.
So you have I mean, I used to even go so far as if a kid was really acting out, and I would have their parents come to school and sit with them. And I used to tell the parents, it's not the teacher's job. When I was teaching, it's not my job to discipline your child. That's your job. So you come to school, and you discipline your child, and we will learn. And I used to have parents come in, and they would have to sit with their kids. And,
and this goes back to
that a couple of times, and all of a sudden the class was very different. But you have
that's so much of the culture, though. That's the other the destruction of the culture, where kids aren't taught to respect their parents or adults. There's so many laws, and people are afraid to do anything. And there's so much other garbage that, and all because the school has tried to. Now, whether the parents or society has been the one forcing this, but as a general rule, as I was saying earlier, schools are treated as a daycare center instead of being a place of education, and trying to get the parents to assume some responsibility for their role in their child's education and behavior. It's just a very different thing. And then, of course, we have all the bad things. We have the attention deficit disorder stuff. All these other things that the autism, this is what society has created a monster on so much of this stuff, and I don't know how we clean up all of it, but it makes it, I think, very challenging for the school system. And I was going to ask him, what was the number one challenge the teachers say? All the teachers he dealt with, what was the number one challenge that they face in the classroom? Is it the craziness of what the state regs are and what here they want to teach the kids individually, but they're forced because of the stupid grades and et cetera, et cetera. Karen, I don't know if you want to chime in.
Well,
I see Joe, you're back out there.
Is that a problem, is that a problem with the actual educators that actually we know that are in there teaching now, that some of them have been indoctrinated and have this agenda that, that is coming out where they're the ones wanting that stuff? But he made a very good point, and it hit me right in the mouth, and I almost fell over when I heard it because I only had – you only go to high school once, and what he does, and he said he stands there and he greets everybody coming in that school to see him, and he's looking for someone that's having a bad day. My principal at the time did that, and I had a problem where my father was a heavy drinker, and I had a bad day, and I'm going to leave it at that. But that was addressed just like he said he's doing, and that is a lost and should be promoted everywhere, because when you have children that see him every day and he's a smile no matter what, even if he's having a bad day, it's to be greeted with someone, just like we talk about our leaders. When we don't have good leaders in politics, who wants to be a politician other than the criminals? Because that's what they're going to do. They see that's okay. But when you have someone that has the guidance and shows you and accept and they put forth the effort to show you they care, it changes the outset, because I could have went down a road that was terrible. And one day, with my principal, just like he said, I almost couldn't talk. You would have said, Tate, it's your turn to talk. I probably wouldn't have been. Couldn't have talked, because I couldn't believe he said that he watched those children come in. And that meant something to me, because I thought that never happened anymore, because in our schools up here, you want to ask that question, the teachers, what's their biggest thing? I bet you if you did the poll up here, it would be the fear of having to worry about what's going to happen to the kids in the class or themselves because of some idiot. And that's the angels like he has. God bless them, because, I mean, they should have that. And another comment was made about the discipline at home. It's got to start at home. It's not a babysitting course. That's a perfect thing. And my mom is one of those people that said, hey, my kid acts up. You're not going to put the belt to him or the paddle. I'll come down there, and you'll have assembly in the gymnasium, and I'll pull his pants down, and I'll bust his ass in front of everybody in the school. But you won't put your hands on my kid. And I thought, okay, I better not do that.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to see my butt.
Man. Years ago,
there's so much control.
Years ago,
okay.
What happened in the 1800s and whatnot, They used to have the paddle with the kids, but when did that stop and why? Because is that a part of the problem? Because teachers did discipline the children.
The teachers.
Okay. Okay. In reference to the, and this was a question at a meeting we had last night, Jackson County Republican Executive Committee was asked to the other. I did just for anybody who was listening earlier, didn't hear earlier. There's another candidate, Hunter Nolan, who's also running for superintendent. He was invited. I was hoping he was going to be on for the second hour, but he was not able to come. So we'll try to get him out there. But he was asked the question last night. What are you going to do to bring prayer and the paddle back into the classroom? And that, I think that's a very valid question. Prayer, because again, we've done everything we can through the school system to destroy the culture, and it's well known. Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals: understanding how you destroy a culture, how you destroy a country, you destroy the culture. How do you do that? Through one generation of at the educational level, and you change the whole. You change so many things. But we have to get back to what we're supposed to be as a society and as a culture. And discipline, and, you know, you go back in the history, did some people get abusive? Instead of the paddling being an attention getter and no permanent damage, you have other abuses. Unfortunately, you have other evil things that happen, and then they go overboard to fix it. And I can't say enough, too, when it comes to the transgendering, all because they care about the kids, and that isn't what they're doing. They're brainwashing. We turned an educational system into another mechanism for destroying the country. But, I mean,
does Florida not let you guys say the Pledge of Allegiance? Is that a state law down there that you guys are not allowed to say the Pledge of Allegiance? Is that how that works down there, or is that
Karen may be able to tell you a little better about the Florida state laws. I think it's optional. I don't think because they do say the pledge, as he mentioned today. They say the pledge, and the other person said they have silent meditation and then they say the pledge. So, but I don't
would
know.
You
if Karen, maybe you can answer. Karen,
would it be more important to say the pledge?
Please let Karen answer. Hold on, let Karen answer. I can't hear both of you at the same time.
It is optional, and they don't. The moment of silence is also optional, and if a child does not want to participate, they don't have to, and if a teacher doesn't want to do it, they don't have to. I personally believe they should have to do it, but that's
right.
Me.
Is prayer more important than the pledge?
That's optional, as I said, so it doesn't matter at that point. Doesn't make any difference.
And
that's almost
in this conversation. We didn't get to ask him about the CRT stuff in the schools and have the books, the garbage that's in the books. Karen, if you give people for those who don't live in Florida, and I know you were going through reviewing these books, understand what kind of garbage is in these books that they're using to teach kids too. And I'm hearing an echo, and I don't know that. Dave, that's probably your phone.
Okay, there's a lot of noise. The real issue
I'm muted.
The things that most people don't pay attention to in the textbooks is the authors. And if you look through the textbooks and you go and investigate who the authors are, the majority of them are socialists. I would say 95%, a vast majority. They've written essays about CRT and socialism and everything else. So in order to have a book that is not biased, a textbook, you can't use authors that come from European countries that don't and can't explain America, can't explain what America is about, which is why they are trying to twist America into, for example, a democracy, which it is not, because the authors of the books, that's what they believe. When I was studying the civics books, one of the chapters was on the 60s, and they asked what civics, what happened, what happened in history that affected the country. They said everything in that went through in the 50s, and they left out JFK's murder, his assassination. So this is it. I mean, that was what started all of this.
Sounds like you wrote it.
No more. That's what started it. But this was a textbook that the kids were reading. So if they're reading a book that eliminates a part of American history, they're not going to know it. And I do agree with Lawrence to a degree, but I don't believe that we should be waiting until 7th grade or 8th grade for kids to be learning American history. If they would say the pledge in kindergarten, which they certainly can say, then they learn civics and history throughout their whole entire career, so that by the time they get to the 7th grade, they should be able to recite the Constitution, because everything they do is part of the Constitution, except being in school, because that's not. So this is why the homeschoolers and the kids that are going to private schools are so further ahead, because things are started earlier. So instead of the nonsense that they're learning in school, and I agree with him with phonics, because that was the bad part. I learned to spell phonetically also, and have always had a little bit of difficulty with that. But the ability to read was far more impressive with the kids that have phonics. And when you talk to homeschool parents, their kids are reading. By the time they go to kindergarten, they can read. And why is that happening? Because the kids know the sounds of the letters. And when you see the letter and you know its sound, you can sound out the words. Now, what we have to work on, of course, is what the words mean, but we're not even trying. A whole word reading is a process that was put in place in the 1930s because it was for children that were deaf, that they couldn't sound out the letters. It failed over and over again, and each time it failed, instead of saying, no, this is a failure, they brought it back under a different name. Today it's phonemic awareness, whatever that means. Phonemic awareness is not phonics, but it sounds like phonics, doesn't it? It sounds nice. So that's what they do. They take the program out, failed, and then they put it back under a different name. The same thing with Common Core. In Florida, we don't have Common Core. We have Sunshine State Standards. What are they? Common Core. They just changed the name and think we're stupid. So this is a big problem that we have. And as long as, I didn't want to say anything to Lawrence because I think he will make a phenomenal superintendent. But if I was a parent today, the last place I would ever put my child is in a public school. They're indoctrination clinics. And they masquerade as public schools. So,
And that's why I ask him, when you see what's going on and what's wrong with the schools, what are you going to do as far as helping educate the parents and the local constituents and people of the community to go and take action, to go to Tallahassee and say, stop with this stuff. Let us teach the kids. And, of course, the Department of Education at the federal level, which is a big part, and we didn't get into any of that. If we would go ahead and teach, history and all that kind of stuff, the federal government isn't supposed to have anything to do with education. That's not their job. That's supposed to be totally local. And so we get back to some of these kind of things, too. But people really, I think the biggest point in the challenge of public education is what the intent of it is today. It's been totally manipulated and used for indoctrination. And the best thing, truthfully, I wish I could say, well, here's what we need to do to save public education. But I really think we have to get the kids out of the public school system because they've become indoctrination. Not that every school district or whatever else has done that, but a lot of them have. And we see it all over the place. And the fact that a kid can graduate and not know how to read, and it's more important for a kid to get a college scholarship for football, and reading doesn't matter if you're going to get that. And just all the insanity. We've totally lost what the meaning of education is. Joe, you've been kind of quiet. Anything you want to chime in on? Right now we're down to about 10 minutes, 11 minutes.
No, I just wanted to say that was, basically you got pretty much touched on what I wanted to say. But, again, we don't understand our history of our country. We don't understand why the federal government has so much overreach. And that's just basically our problem. You know, we're national citizens. And we gave away our states' rights, and we got to figure that out. We got to get back. We got to restore our states. We got to restore each individual state. So I emailed you. That goes over that, actually. With two guests from 10 years ago I had on from America's Remedy. And, man, that will blow your socks off if you listen to that.
I'm planning on listening to it later. I wasn't able to listen to it earlier today, but I thank you for sending that. But definitely plan it. If you want to, post that link out in the chat. Not too many people
Sally,
left out there.
What school district is that again? Where is he at down there in Florida?
Jackson County, Florida. It's in the Panhandle.
Jackson County.
South of the Alabama line.
Smokey and the Bandit country.
Yep. Real education could do so much, and that's why I love the expression so much from Jefferson. If you expect the nation to be ignorant and free, you expect what never was and will never be. We have got to get back on track and educating. The people have been dumbed down, and they have been dumbed down so much. It's terrible. And for a lot of reasons, but a lot of us just been playing all evilness like Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals and Insanity to try to destroy this country. So people really need to face that. And let's see. We've got Karen, anything else you want to share for right now? We've got about 9 minutes.
I think I've said quite enough. It's a very sad state of affairs, I believe, that we have tossed our kids into, and we're not giving them a future, and it's very sad, and I feel that they are being guided into, the media has romanced communism so badly that the kids are being guided into it. And this is where we are right now, and it's up to us to make sure that they don't. And the bad part is that most of the people don't even talk about it. They're so busy talking about a football game or a game or a sport that they don't recognize the fact that our country is being stolen from underneath us. And the kids should be involved. They should understand. They should know what their country is about. I asked the teacher once, when they were doing whole word reading, I said, if the word freedom doesn't come up, how do kids know what it is? So she said, oh, I never thought of it. So if you're teaching whole word reading and you're not going to teach the word constitution, how do they know what it is? If you don't teach the word freedom, how do they know what it is? And they don't. They have no idea. Look at what, when they do a walk around to the college kids, they can't even name the states. They can't name the presidents. They don't even know who the president is. They don't know who the vice president is. And then you're going to say to them, go vote? Really? So this is quite a mess, and it's up to us to fix it. And that's what
well, and
this
I think
show is
that's-
all about.
And that's actually a point, and I have to admit I've been lax when it comes to going to school board meetings. I need to get more engaged in going to the local school board meetings, because that's a big part of the problem. They want to bring in other programs, do this or that or whatever else that are cost millions that don't do anything. And we got to get back to the child being the individual, which I think is probably one of the strongest things. And I think this is kind of what Table saying as well, that knowing the individual child, we have to treat the kids as individuals, not as just a bunch of numbers, and they're in this process. It's a robotic thing that you're putting them through a machine instead of actually taking the time to properly educate them. And I guess the one other thing real quick, if you had another question for Lawrence Pinder, what would be one of the key questions, or to the other candidates, including Hunter, Nolan, that kind of thing? What is one of the biggest questions or challenges that the superintendents, we need them to change? They all want to be somewhat politically correct when I say, what is the biggest problem in Jackson County schools? Why, and what are you going to do to fix it? And they tend to be a little bit generic, I think, on that answer. So what is the number one problem in Jackson County?
You're asking me?
Yes.
Okay, I would say it's the curricula, stupid. That's the problem. If you teach garbage, they're going to learn garbage. Garbage in, garbage out, and they're learning garbage. So in order to fix anything, you got to fix the root cause. Where have we heard that before? The root cause is what they are learning. They are learning nothing. They are learning communism. They are learning, what is that idiot? Vice President Hopeful say, and one man's socialism is another man's neighborliness. really.
Oh, yeah.
So
oh, that was sick.
They set up a hotline to rat on your neighbors in case they go out when they should be home and stuck wearing a mask. This is what the kids are learning. And this is what they're learning in school. They're not learning that I'm an individual. I can think for myself. Masks don't work. I read that. I read multiple reports. I'm not going to wear one. Okay, that's thinking for yourself. You don't need some governor to tell you you have to stay indoors, and if you don't stay indoors, I'm going to have your neighbors rat on you. I mean, this is what they're learning. So
you
want to
know what the craziest thing is, too, you guys? We have these cell phones, and the cell phones that we have information that if you ask it any question, anything, it's going to give you about a 90% probability of an accurate or at least a direction to an answer. Yet, we had to go to the library and use the Dewey Decimal System and the cards and the index cards and all that stuff. But yet,
right.
if we would have had these cell phones to access the information for history or anything else. And these kids today are absolutely the I hate to say they're the dumbest when they have the most the technological device ever seen by man and walking around and can't even write their own name.
If you don't know what question, if you don't know what question to ask, then you're not going to ask it a question. And they don't know what question to ask. And it's the biggest problem.
And plus the phones are used for the wrong thing, too.
The other issue, too.
The information is being censored. So if I mean, look at what happened last week. People would go
100%.
Online and they would try to see what happened at the Trump assassination, and it came up everybody else's assassination except Trump. So you got to teach the kids to use the books because the books are not being censored yet. Some of them are.
Yeah,
yeah. And he brought
which is sort of the same
as
true. Hold on, Dave.
Okay.
We're running out of time here. The other thing we got to keep in mind too is going back to what I think you both were actually saying. You have that electronic device. They can control the message, just like we have this mainstream media that a couple of groups own so much of the mainstream media that it's a controlled message. The same thing's is happening with these cell phones. The same thing is with electronic books. People think I'm crazy because I buy real books with them. Well, this book is going to be the same 20 years down the road. The letters aren't going to change. What they're putting out there on that electronic technology, they can go out there and manipulate that book to say something different. And if you really want to study stuff, look at the old books. I go to different estate sales and yard sales. Pick up the old books. Pick up an old dictionary and see what the word game
100%.
Is. I mean, how they have changed it. So, but before we go, because we are down to the wire here, I was going to ask Joe, what do you think is the biggest problem you have in education in North Carolina, or similar to what we've already said? Anything you want to add to that? What's the challenge of education?
I think the problem is that the children here in North Carolina, at least when I saw, and when I was a kid, elementary school and middle school, it was hands-on with the teachers. As soon as I went to high school, it was a free-for-all, and that's why most kids drop out in high school. So I think that's a problem that has to be addressed. You know, maybe it's too overcrowded, not enough attention by one teacher to the classroom size, I don't know. But I know when I was in high school, teachers lost contact with me, you know, and I ran buck wild. So that was a failure, you know, it was a failure of the system. So I don't know how that is, how you guys address that, but that's one of the things I saw.
I would agree. I would agree. We have to focus on the individual, and we also have to focus on truth, teaching the true, the core basics and the history and those types of things, because school is going to impact the parents should be the key in establishing that they teach respect and these kind of things and values. But the school system is part of it, too. The two go hand in hand. If you're getting two completely different messages for what you should be at the what you're taught at home versus what you're taught at school, school is teaching no respect for teachers. Kids can do whatever they want. The rights of the student over the rights of the classroom, decorum, and things like that, it's all part of the problem. That's my take on it. So anyway,
he brought up Adolf Hitler. You know, he said he brought up Adolf Hitler, and he had to do a paper on that. You know, and that's a perfect example of what we're saying about truth, because I saw my history teacher not 3 months ago. It was also my baseball coach for 4 years in varsity. It was my dad's best friend. I asked him. I said, "Do you realize that just about everything that you taught me in class has been either debunked or just about isn't true to a point or isn't actually the whole truth. And I go, and there's some things that you left out. He goes, well, what are you talking about? And I said, have you ever heard of the Holodomor and the atrocities that went on with the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia? I said, because I never heard a thing about that until COVID hit. And I happened to come across it on my phone and watched and talked to Mike Singer with the great Big Virus Hoax. And he said, you need to watch Europa, The Last Battle, that 12-hour documentary on what happened over there. And everything prior to that history changed my life, because that's the flip side of the coin that we never hear about, because the winners of wars write our history that we see and hear. Not even if it's not that we win, they don't have to be right. They could be the wrongest people and win the war, but they still dictate what we get to see and hear. And that's completely unfair, because more people, more Protestant Christians were slaughtered in the Bolshevik Revolution. And if you knew the agenda then, you would see where it funnels down into now. And that truth and that knowledge of having that information is crucial on every level for everything, so that the developing mind of a child can make the difference between or choose. At least they have the option to do so, not be funneled into the agenda of these people that want to make us dumb. What are we going to do when they turn the lights off in this country, when the light, the power goes out? Like you said, Sal, I have done exactly what you've done. I have a small library now, and my friend said, have you lost your mind? I said, no. But I said, but when the lights go out, I'll be able to read a book. Well, you're going to watch your phone. Good luck on that one. It's the truth. ask a kid to pick up an atlas or a map and show you how to get where you got to go. They can't do it. They just can't do it.
Well,
it's crazy.
And good point. Most of them don't know how to make change out of at a cash register.
And oh,
the machine
my God.
Doesn't tell them. And that's a whole other thing. But we got to wrap it up here. That's very good point.
Phone even says if you want to send money, right, you can round it up. You don't even have to get the change right. You can choose the part of your phone to send the money or do whatever, so you don't have to confuse somebody for over counting change out. You can just round it up. Are you kidding me? Oh, my God. My God, you like it, well.
But it all goes back to the ultimate Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, understanding how you change a culture, you change it through the kids, you change it through the kids through public education. It really, it's truly not rocket science, and we see what's happened across the board on here. So anyway, thank you so much. It was a good show. Who knows, maybe the other candidate, there's a couple of them out there. Maybe they'll want to come on, but we are truly in the primary early voting. Depending on what part of the state, I guess they kind of vary, but it's mandatory, I think, through the 10th through the 18th for Florida for the primary that's going on now. And then the actual primary is on the 20th. I typically vote on primary day. I've only voted early a few times in my life, but that's underway now, too. So they are out there trying to get every vote they can, and they're having to catch people before they go into that early voting. I really don't like early voting. I think it's we should be ending it, and we should be doing that at the state level. We can do that. So anyway, thank you again for tuning in on
Wednesday
special
here. How long has that guy been in the superintendent that he's running against? How long has that guy been in that position already?
Oh, he's been in public education. Yeah, Karen. Well, how long has Pender been in education?
About 25, 30 years.
Oh, yeah. My God.
He's been a principal at multiple schools. He's been in different districts. He's got a broad level. Yeah. Yeah.
Great show, Tyler.
Okay.
Great show.
Thank you. And we will talk again on Monday. Please tune in. We'll see what we're going to talk about Monday, but we'll take care of it there. Thank you, everyone. Good conversation. May God bless America. Pray for the children. Help educate the children, knowing that the public school system doesn't totally do the job. And with that being said, good night, and we will talk again soon. Thank you.
Yep.
God bless America.